Greetings and welcome to Baron Craze's Visions of Horror, Episode 15. This is covering the April 9th through April 15th. We started off the show with the band called Ground Meat. Their track was Pathological Silence. The band is found on Facebook, and of course, please purchase their music through Bandcamp to support them. Well, let's start off. It's Sunday, and we got a good old classic one I watched. It was called House of Wax from 1953. Now, this has got a rating of GP, which is known as maybe a general pass, if you would. It's really just kind of rated for today, saying, look, there's really nothing bad about this movie nowadays. It's an hour and 28 minutes long, so it fits right into that 90-minute window. And it's 70 years old. Now, obviously, it's a horror film. And the director was Andre D. Tooth. That's T-O-T-H. The writers were Crane Wilbert, Charles Blendon. It starred Vincent Price. I mean, that's really all you need to know. But there were a couple others, of course. There was Carolyn Jones, obviously known for her Addams Family starring roles. And then, of course, it was Frank Lovejoy and Phyllis Kirk and Roy Roberts and Paul. Now, I don't know how to say Paul's last name, so I'm going to spell it. It is P-I-C-E-R-N-I. The company that put out the film was Warner Brothers. Now, simple summary, and I think everybody kind of knows this one. An associate burns down a wax museum with the owner inside, but he survives only to become very vengeful and murderous. That kind of makes sense if you think about it and what that fire would do to somebody who's been almost taken out because of really an insurance scam the his partner wanted to do. That's really what we have here. So the film's got a 7 out of 10, which I fully agree with. I think this is just a great classic horror movie. The original release date for it was April 9th of 1953. And of course, when I can, I always try to watch a film on its anniversary date. Kind of takes me always back to make me think about what it was like when this film actually premiered in the theater. And I think it's just a great way of doing that. This is the kind of film I would love to see actually return to a silver screen, and just have it out there, even as for a weekend, you know, just a one-off chance to see it up on the big screen again. Well, we do have quite a few taglines to go over. Some of them are a bit long, I will admit to that one, but what are you going to do? So, one of the original print ads, and it was all in caps, was, unlike anything you have seen before. That would be a pretty true statement for this film. The Ultimate Dimension in Terror. Another one was Stereovision 3D, the most realistic film process ever developed. Next, then, is Warner Brothers brings you the first feature produced by a major studio in 3D. Then we've got, nothing has gone before can compare with this. All right. You've never been scared until you've been scared in 3D. All right. Beauty and terror meet you in your seat. As every thrill of its story comes off the screen right at you in natural vision, 3D. I'll get back to a couple of these. Now Warner Brothers brings you 3D natural vision, unlike anything you've ever seen before. A feature picture, a story sensation. And lastly, the wax figures also looked like other people. People who have disappeared. Okay. So, one of the big things you have here is that it's obviously in 3D. And the marketing for that was trying to figure out how to entice the audience with that. How do you get the audience to understand that not just the artwork is trying to be presented in a 3D format, but a tagline, some sort of marketing gimmick. And that would be difficult. I mean, the audience is not familiar with this type of technology. There's no kind of trade show. There's no kind of documentary. There's nothing like that. So how do you unleash this type of experience onto an unsuspecting audience? And really, the best way that I could imagine the film got marketed was primarily by word of mouth. One person would go and see the film, and then they would tell their coworkers, or, you know, somebody else they know, and then they would go see the film, and so forth. That's really primarily how the marketing worked for the film, by word of mouth. Obviously, very slow and such, because, look, it's an old film, okay? But I could understand that the marketing was going to be difficult. I would not fault any of these taglines in the sense that, how do you convey? And I thought about this. How would I convey in 3 to 5 words a new technology and what the movie's about? I mean, you know, the only thing I could come up with, wax figures, right? So that's 2 words. Wax figures, lifelike, you know, or wax figures. Do you know them? You know, something like that. Wax figures, missing someone? You know, give an illusion of that. Now, that last one, you know, wax figures, are you missing someone? That all kind of works into that 5 words there. So that could work, but it doesn't say anything about 3D. So that would be the downfall of that marketing. So it would be very, very difficult. The film had a budget of $1 million, and it grossed $23.7 million. So obviously, it made back its money, and then some. Now, a couple of things that should be noted here. Although the film was produced in 3D, ironically, the director was blind in one eye and hence could not see the effect. That's kind of weird. I mean, you would know that the director is blind. You just wouldn't have known it back then. But you still hire him to do a 3D movie? I mean, talk about not wanting to discriminate. I mean, kind of weird, right? And another thing that happened is that Moset, it must have been easy for Vincent Price to act alarm in the sequence in which his museum is being burned down. See, right before the shoot, the director's crew, I guess, basically set 3 spot fires in what was considered strategic locations. And then the cameras started to roll. You got to remember, not the cameras of the day, the cameras of then. So big reels, a lot of machinery. It took time to get everything to start to run. So right there, everything kind of goes downhill. The team quickly lost control of their fires, which then merged into one massive inferno and put a hole in the soundstage roof and kind of singed Price's eyebrows. But because of the rapid melting wax mannequins that would have been very hard to replace, and let's face it, very expensive too, the director decided to keep on filming. Even as the firemen are arriving to try to extinguish the flames, he's going, go for it, just get the shot, get the shot, get the shot. And you can think about this, and directors even today do things like this. Oh, damn, it's all falling apart on the set. No problem, keep filming. It's the rule. Always have some camera running at all times because you never know when that really special moment could occur. And maybe it doesn't even make the film. It's just something that happens on set that you can then, you know, play up in marketing going with, oh, if you think, you know, I don't know, you say something like, if you think the terror is happening just on the set, wait until you find out what happened behind the cameras. I mean, that kind of thing. And people are like, oh, my God, what else happened? There was all this turmoil behind the cameras. What's going to be on the screen? So, and that happens today. That kind of marketing ploy is used today also. We all hear about it. Now, the alcoholic sculptor was a heroin addict in the original version of this film, which was The Mystery of the Wax Museum from 1933. But that had to be changed in the remake because the production code forbade any mention of drug addiction. You got to remember, it's 53. There is a production code rule that's in place. And this is really part of the Hays Code you've all heard me talk about in the past. This is part of the Catholic rule code that was in place. There was these different rule packages. So if you passed, let's say, the Hays Code, then you had a production code. If you passed the production code, you had to get past the Catholic League. And if you passed the Catholic League, then your film got the green light to go. But at any one spot, the film could get blocked by any one of these groups, and your film could just be, you know, knocked for whatever reason. So really you weren't allowed to see things in a way. They were almost not banning the movie, but they were seriously censoring the films, so that what would happen in the end, you couldn't see what you wanted to see. We had basically a group of people who were worse than the MPAA. Understand, they're worse. That would tell you as an adult, sorry, you're not of the right level to see this type of movies. We will choose for you. We will be your elders, and we will choose what you may or may not see. And people went along with this. They said, well, that's the way it is. That's the way I've got to be. Okay, you're an adult. I'm an adult, but you would choose for me. Yeah, you know, couldn't happen today, could it? I don't know. Now, the film does reference Frankenstein from 1931. It was remade, obviously, as House of Wax in 2005. And as I told you, it is a remake and a version of The Mystery of the Wax Museum from 1933. Now, let's go on, because there's a lot more information to get into here. Now, the film has been referenced in quite a few films, and I'm going to give you a rundown of them all. All right, so here we go. We got The Mad Magician from 1954, A Bucket of Blood in 1959, Chamber of Horrors in 1966, Nightmare in Wax in 69, Dr. Fibes in 71 and 72, with Fibes Rises Again, Theater of Blood in 73, Terror in the Wax Museum from 73, Madhouse from 74, Tourist Trap from 79, Dead and Buried from 81, House of Long Shadows in 83. Then, of course, got to note it just for the pure glory of it, Michael Jackson's Thriller music video from 1983, Night of the Comet from 1984, Wax Works from 1988, Dark Man from 1990, Wax Works 2, Lost in Time from 92, Wax Mask from 97, the Anatomy movie from 2000, and then finishing out there was House of Wax in 2005. Now, it has been featured in the Horror Hall of Fame, a TV movie from 74, and of course, in Vincent Price's The Sinister Image in 1987. Now, I saw this film also on a Blu-ray, but you want to really hear my thoughts about the film. I think you guys kind of know it. This is what I like to call a classic horror-filled fun show. This is really is. This has got all. It just hits all the bells for you if you're looking for that classic horror. You're not looking for over-the-top gore, jump scares, and all that stuff packed in today's films. If you're just looking for good old-fashioned horror storytelling, this is that. And of course, like I said, it's a remake. And people say, well, Baron, I thought you were against remakes. Yes and no. And I've changed my tune on this a couple of times. If your remake is going to be a quality remake, if you're going to take the story and start driving in a slightly different direction, great, wonderful. But if you're going to do a shot-for-shot remake, what's the point? I mean, I just don't understand that. Explain that to me. If you're going to tell a story again, great. I'm curious about learning it. Look, think about how many times you watched the movie Dracula. In every different type of avenue and perspective another director or writer will take on that storyline. It all can be interesting. You just have to make it that way. Give it something a little bit different, and we're all going to buy into it. So when it comes to a remake, as long as it's not going to be a shot for shot with nothing being changed, and you're going to make a quality movie, a quality film. So I'll give a great example. So right now, we take The Haunting from 1963. This is a classic gothic horror story. It is a very, very good, effective horror movie. Then we make a film called The Haunting from 1999. This movie, compared to original, is terrible. It doesn't live up to the original. It flounders in so many different ways. So again, if you're going to make a movie and you're going to remake it, then you have to make it, you know, worthwhile. I mean, if you take the movie The Innocents from, 1961, I believe, and then you take the movie The Turning, which is, I believe that was the name of the title of that film, because I just recently saw it, and, oh, God, what were they thinking? It's got a complete mess at the end of the movie. It's all over the place. So, again, do I hate remakes? I'm not a lover of them. If they're not done effectively well and you do something differently with the core part of the story. All right, so leave that there. Now, so basically, where was I? Again, so House of Wax is a remake of The Mystery of the Wax Museum, which was made about 20 years earlier. And in that, Lionel Atwell played Price's role, a different name, but the same kind of character. And Atwell was great, but you got to admit, if you've seen it, Price is way superior. I mean, just blows it off the tracks. And so is the movie. The movie, I think, flows a lot better, even with the production code restrictions into it. It does stick a bit well to the original film, but there are some good changes. Notably, the absence of the girl reporter, which was originally done by Faye Ray. And there's a couple reasons why her role was removed. And again, this kind of deals with the production code of a little bit, and also studio brass. They felt that it's 1953, women should not have roles, jobs, if you would. They should be more of the homemaker. And that way, this wouldn't encourage a woman to go into what they consider a male-oriented field. So that was one of those things that they had kind of put into that coding. Now, look, I don't think there's a person out there who doesn't know that Vincent Price is one of my all-time favorite horror actors. I mean, you know, he's right up there with my Peter Cushings and my Christopher Lee ones out there. And it is an important film of Price's career. It really made him a horror legend at that moment. You know, we've seen these films throughout horror history where they're just always making somebody's career. That one film, that's it. They're solidified forever in horror. And we know that, and there's no question about it. I mean, take a Robert Englund, right? In Nightmare on Elm Street. Bang. That's it. Solidified. Done. Case closed. We don't have to worry about it anymore. Those kind of film roles just make it set. And really, this is where things went. You know, he would make a couple of non-horror films after this, but they wouldn't actually fly as high because people always would think he's the killer. He's the murderer. He's the, you know, he's the guy we're all looking for to do something, right? And you take that to Robert Englund. Robert Englund was on an episode of Criminal Minds once. Everybody kept thinking that, you know, he's the killer. And it would have been classic, of course, if we just had for one little moment, one just tinsy tiny little moment, somewhere in the arc of the story, a red and green sweater or, you know, something that just gave you a hint of his known persona, if you would. But yeah, this film really did cement him there. And of course, all through the 60s with Roger Corman's Poe movies just made him even a bigger horror star. And the film itself, again, is very creepy, suspenseful. It's got this great performance that from Price and from everybody else and the 3D experience added to it and the gothic sense pouring everywhere all over the film really, really makes it worthwhile. And I do recommend that you see this movie. I really do. And with that being said, we're going to kind of close this one out here with a band called Ghouls and Dolls, which also is named for some reason, a band called Also. You know, yeah, the word also, that's how they're also known as. And there you go. With a track called R.I.P. It Up. This band is found on Bandcamp, and this was available through the Creative Commons licensing. And that'll be closing us up as out for this particular day. Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. I put up my money, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, I have the time. Cause it's Saturday night, baby, I'm a feeling fine. I'm gonna rev it up. And I won't be late. I pick her up in my 88. I shake her down to the soldier hall. When the music's jumping, I'll have a ball. I'm gonna rev it up. Gonna rock it up. I'm gonna shake it up. I'm gonna burn it up. I'm
the sky. I don't care if I spend my gold, cause tonight I'm gonna be one happy soul. I'm gonna rev it up.
So you just heard the band, or I should say maybe the artist, Ray Gun Hero with the track Prom Night Mystery. The artist is found through Bandcamp, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We want to give thanks out to the label Retro Synth Records, found on Bandcamp and Twitter and Facebook. Also, if you're following along with the script, which is found at the Horror Times, you just go down to podcast and you'll find the link for the show. You would have also seen there's a video that features scenes from Prom Night from 1980. Now, before I go on here, I should note that today's film is for April 11th, Tuesday. I was unavailable on April 10th, so therefore there is no film to speak of. And of course, the film is Prom Night. There you go, kind of easy one. From 2008, though. This was rated PG-13, an hour and 28 minutes long. It's celebrating the 15 years old. It's a horror movie, obviously. The director is Nelson McCormick, and the writer was J. S. Cardon, or maybe Card One? I don't know. Could be a lot of different ways to say the last name. Well, it stars Brittany Snow, Scott Porter, Jessica Stroop, Dana Davis, Colin Penne, Kelly Blatz, James Ranson, and, here's a name for you. I'll just spell this. It first name is I-D-R-I-S, and last name is E-L-B-A. Excuse me there. The film that put it out, the company, was Columbia Pictures. Now, the summary. Donna's senior prom is supposed to be the best night of her life, though a sadistic killer from her past has different plans for her and her friends. Now, this film was released on April 10th of 2008 and now has the nice, jolly time of being a 3.9 out of 10. Not a good sign. Now for some taglines. Let's see if you can find the common theme in the taglines. Are you ready? Let's go for it. All right, we got five of them. You're looking for a common theme. A party to die for. It's midnight. Everyone's ready to go home, but someone has other plans. A night to die for. A night to die for. It was a memory she couldn't forget, but her nightmare has just begun. So, before I go on, you can tell there were three taglines that are basically done the same way. So the first one is a party to die for, all right? The next two are all about the capitalization in the words. As you heard me say, a night to die for, a little bit higher pitch, right? To the other one, a night to die for, kind of lower tone because it's all in lowercase. Yeah, see, that tells me, hi, my job was to come up with five taglines, and I'll just change the height level on some of the words, and that should be good, right? Now give me my money. To me, that's not getting it done. That's just not getting it done. But there's reasons why it couldn't get done, and we'll get into that in just a moment. Now, for those people who'd like to go to places where films were done, you could technically go to this place. You really could. The hotel where the prom takes place is the Park Plaza Hotel in Los Angeles, California. Now, this film was made in 2008, so things could have changed around on the floor, so maybe they'll be difficult to match up where, for example. But, you know, it's something you could do, but I would probably say it's going to be expensive. So really think about how much you really are dedicated to the cause to go to this Park Plaza Hotel. Now, the film had a budget of $20 million, and it did gross $57.1. So, yes, it did make its budget back, but not by a hell of a lot. I mean, people say, well, Baron, it made the $20 million back. I get that, okay? But let's understand something. You spend $20 million, it's gone, right? So you have to earn back $20 million, and then you'd be at break-even, and you got to earn back another $20 million. So now that's $40 million and you're making $57. So really in the end, you only made $17 million on your total swing of $40. Even if you took the basic interest rate off of that, you could have done a lot more with that money. So it's a film that now has such a low rating among the horror fans. All right, let's get kind of into some of the trivia here because I think this is a little bit important. While the film does contain a body count of 14, which should be really great carnage for the horror fans out there, it doesn't exactly work. Now, Scott Porter is 7 years older than Brittany Snow while playing a high school senior of the same age. I want you to understand that. We have people that are older than other people who are supposed to be playing teenage roles. I know this is done a lot, but you mean you seriously couldn't find actual teenagers? I mean, look, I understand from the working, you know, laws and everything of minors working on sets and things. I get it. But you're telling me you couldn't find a couple 18 and 19-year-olds? Seriously? You couldn't find me any young, upcoming stars? Even if they weren't maybe well-known, make them unknowns. I understand you're looking to bank in on somebody's name and such. I get it. I understand that. Then make that person that you're trying to bank on a chaperone or someone of significance somewhere else in this film that can actually, you know, share some of that screen time with. But pick people that fit the age range. We see it all the time. I'm getting tired of it. I mean, I am not saying I'm against ageism in any way. Please, no. Look, I'm about to hit 50. And according to some horror people out there, I'm over the hill. I know nothing about the subject. I'm out of the loop, so to speak. I'm back here to tell you that ain't true. There's no way you're going to start beating me at horror. Forget it. But at least in these films, get the people that fit the role the right way. It's not that hard. Really, it isn't. All right. So anyway, aside from the title and the concept of the teenagers being stalked by a killer at the prom, this film shares no connection whatsoever with the original Prom Night movie from 1980, and I think that's a big problem. The second biggest problem, and this is where everything really falls apart for this movie. This film holds a distinction for being the first slasher film in the history of horror films to receive a PG-13 rating. Now, understand what I'm trying to tell you here. There'll probably be, in time, other slasher movies that will get re-rated over time. So maybe in 20 years from now, a film that was rated R might slip into a PG-13 because we have gone further with our shock and awe in these movies. But for the time being, this was got the distinction of being a PG-13 slasher film, which is completely unusual for everything. Now, you know, this is a film that kind of shares, sadly, a relationship with another movie called When a Stranger Calls, which I believe is the remake from 2006. That film tries to say it's a slasher, but the killer in that movie doesn't even use knives. You see where we're going here, right? We're really winding down into trying to get more bang for the buck by going to the PG-13 market. And that becomes problematic in a lot of different ways. It really does. So obviously we know it's a remake of Prom Night from 1980. It's been referenced in Scream, the Inside Story from the 2011, which was a TV movie. It was referenced in the actual film Scream 4, Slice and Dice, a slasher film forever from 2012. Slash from 2013, and the Crystal Lake Memories, the complete history of Friday 13th video from 2013. Now, I'll tell you right now, you can find this film on Hulu, all right? And my opinion, all right, how do I put this nicely? It lacks gore. It really does. You're not going to be surprised by that. It's going to lack gore. That's just something you're going to face it right there. I mean, PG-13, you're going to lack gore. You're going to lack a lot of other things, too. And we're also probably handed what I would like to call one of the most least intriguing or scary killers. I mean, the killer is not scary. It's not intriguing. Doesn't have any kind of interesting backstory that I really care about. It's just Joe Schmo killer. That's how we're going to look at this. Also, the film, I would agree with many other people out there, lacks originality, definitely. And it's full of cliches. If you were of the drinking age, you could do some sort of fun little drinking game with this movie for every cliche. And you may say, well, Baron, I'm not of the drinking age, so what do you think I should do? Fine. You're not of the drinking age and you're not a diabetic? Here's something. Why don't you sit down and have to eat some type of really sugary type of candy? I don't know, a pixie stick, I don't know, do that with something else. I don't know, do something You know, because it'll be a hell of a lot more entertaining. Now people are going, oh, Baron, you're encouraging people doing challenges. No. I said candy, okay? You know, pop some good and plenties. You know, get a sugar rush off of this thing. Line them up. Go, okay, for every cliche that you can't name for another movie, you got to eat one of the white good and plenties. For one that you can name, you know, it's one of the pink ones. Do something. Have a little fun with the game, all right? Have some fun. Do it with M&Ms for all I care. I don't really care. Do it with Skittles. You know, whatever. Have some fun with the cliches, all right? All right, so next up, you got a plot that's so predictable. I mean, really, you could actually get up in the middle of this movie, go to the bathroom, get something to eat, come back, and you wouldn't miss a beat. You wouldn't. It's predictable. You know where it's going, and that really becomes quite pathetic. I mean, that you could play on your phone, you could talk to somebody else, you could go to the bathroom, come back. You could do a lot of different things. You still wouldn't miss a beat in the film and not know what's going on. You wouldn't. It's so easy. Look, while the original is not a masterpiece by any sense of the means there, it still is horror. It's something to remember. But this one, I'll be very honest. When I go back and do a review of this film, I'm going to have to watch this movie again, sadly, because I can't really remember enough of it to put together for an actual film review. I mean, I know it's kind of stretching a little bit. You guys all know I remember movies really well. I guess when I start sitting down, I look back at my notes, because that's what I do. I do take notes on every single film I do. A lot of times, if I can, I will have my voice recorder with me, and I will pause the movie because of a few issues I'm having, and I'll speak into the voice recorder, you know, put my notes down, and then I bring that back, and then it's a matter of going, Baron, what do you got to do? Listen to your voice and copy things down? Nope. I then use the voice recorder to then have it talk into a voice that texts. It listens to the voice, copies everything down, and there go my notes, and then I can build from there. Just one of those little tricks of things I do. Nothing that people, Baron, you're giving away some of your tricks. Not really. A lot of writers do it. It's nothing different. All right? And that's really it. And there you guys go. All right. With that being said, you know, we're done with today. And, you know, for a lot of you, you're going to be hearing a next song here called by the band Winter with the track Unholy Blood. So enjoy that.
for money and wealth. We're working for your goals until a certain death. You're just a loser, but still you're standing tall. You're abusing your powers to oppress us all. You are a filthy liar. You play with our lives. You set the world on fire. And you prepare a flood. Veins filled with poison. Your heart made of ice.
So you guys probably heard the music there for Winter was the band. The track was Unholy Blood. They are basically found on Bandcamp through Echo Zone, to be exact. And there's a music video for you all to enjoy up there on the script. So here you are on April 12th. It's Wednesday, and the film is The Unholy from 1988. Right? That's right. Not the other Unholy movie that's been recently released. But from 1988, it's rated R. It's an hour and 42 minutes long. 35-year-old film here. Horror movie. The director was Camilo Vila. The writers for the film were Philip Jordan and Fernando Fonseca. I'll spell that. It's F-O-N-S-E-C-A. We'll get right to a minute here on the stars. Kind of roll back here, give a little change up, because I'm always doing the same thing on the show. The company that put it out was Vestron Pictures. You have a priest battles a demon that kills sinners in the act of sinning. Wow. How interesting, right? All right, so for the stars in the film, well, we got the Google Translator set up, so that was honestly what was happening there. There's a couple of names in here that I really don't feel like butchering. There's a couple I would definitely be able to say, and then there's a couple I wouldn't. So let's get the Google Translator to help us out here.
Ruben Rabassa, Nicole Fortier, Peter Frechette, Ned Beatty, Laurie White, Ben Cross, Hal Holbrook, Trevor Howard.
There we go, and I thank you again, Google Translator, for the assistance. This film has got a 5 out of 10 and was originally released on April 22nd of 1988. We only have two taglines for you, so here we go. One's pretty easy to understand, the other one's a little bit longer. It is seduction, submission, murder, tonight, dot, dot, dot. So three little dots, and then it's evil goes over the edge. All right, we didn't need to know all about evil going over the edge. I mean, the movie's called Unholy, but we'll let it go. And the other tagline is, you haven't got a prayer. okay, that's it. That's all there is. There's no more. Okay, couldn't you come up with maybe prayers won't save your soul? I mean, couldn't you come up with that? I mean, think about it. Prayers won't save your soul. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's five right there. And I think it's got a little bit better. You know, it doesn't it sound better? So, anyway, there you go. All right, my view on it. No one asked me, but I figured I'd give it out there. The film grossed $6.3 million, which is not a hell of a lot of money. And I'll be very honest, the film probably wasn't made for much either. It does reference, or excuse me, the film was referenced in Leprechaun from 1993. The film was found on an old DVD. I can't tell you whether it's an actual DVD or it was somebody ripped it onto it, but that's the way I watched it. So there you guys go. Let's see here. How do I put the opinion of this movie? I remember seeing this film on VHS way, way back when. So far back that I could probably remember the video store we would rent movies from, which was known, I think, as West Coast Video. So kind of give you a thought process of not only age of myself, but what store I would go to. You know, if you're serious-minded and with some really positive points, it can still be really disappointing, this movie. I mean, if you go into that, right? So if you're going to go in with a real serious-minded for this film and try to nitpick all the little parts to it, you're going to be disappointed. It's got a good concept, but it's pretty sparse on special effects. It's got a pretty good cast. I mean, Hal Holbrook, Ben Crosser in the movie. So it's got a good, you know, cast. It's just really, you know, the storyline is a little clunky. The pacing is a little wobbly. But the special effects, even for when it was made, are really, 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 you know, a splurge here and a splash there kind of thing. Which, again, tells you the budget isn't very high. There's not a lot they can do with not much of a budget. Basically, look, The Unholy involves an evil demon that takes form of a major player in the film, okay? So you've got to be thinking, obviously, this is going to be a very beautiful woman, because the people who made the film know that my core audience is going to be, you know, teenage boys. That's going to be my core audience. That's what I'm aiming for. That's what I want. In order to seduce priests, so we can claim their souls of innocence for Satan or something along these lines. It's a little murky what we got going on. It does remind me of an Italian horror film called The Church. So, you know, which I did enjoy, which again, still not all the way up there. There's something about always in these big kind of Catholic churches, you know, these kind of films being done. Now, of course, it doesn't reference where this was actually done. Whether it was done on a soundstage is what I'm thinking, because I just don't see it being done in an actual church. But it's got a lot of that normal satanic hallucination kind of things out there. Depending on who you are, depends on how you're going to feel about this movie nowadays. Some people go, oh my God, the film is called Unholy, therefore I'm going to be possessed if I watch this movie. And the rest of us will scratch and yawn and go, well, it's a horror movie. And that's really, unfortunately, I really don't have much else to say about the film. I really don't. All right, with that being said, I'm going to leave you with the music of Midnight Syndicate with the track Harvard Gas Asylum. So enjoy that. Thank you. All right, so you guys heard Midnight Syndicate there with the Havergast Asylum. The band is found on MidnightSyndicate's website.com. Also on Facebook, and of course, look them up on Twitter. So welcome to April 13th, Thursday. We have we have a movie called John Jam Haunted Asylum. Now I'm going to spell this opening word here. It's GONJIAM. It came out in 2018. It's not rated. It's an hour and 35 minutes long. 5-year-old horror film. It's obviously, again, a horror movie. Now, I'll get back to the writers, the directors, and the stars because I'm going to be using a Google Translator because I will butcher these names up fantastically well. The company put it out was BF Distribution. The summary for this is a crew of horror web series travels to an abandoned asylum for a live broadcast, and it soon encounters much more than they expected as they move deeper inside the nightmarish old building. Now, this film's got a 6.4 out of 10. Release date originally for it was March 28th of 2018. As for some taglines, we do have three. Here we go. One of the seven freakiest places in the world. All right. Or one of the freakiest places in the world. And lastly, experience the horror. All right. There you go. You understand it. Now, this film is a foreign film. I will give you that much. Now, here's where it gets interesting. All right? And I wanted to break this out because I thought this was really curious. The film was released in the United States and Canada. Now, in Canada, from what I understand, it was only in about two theaters. And those could have been even in film festivals. In the United States, not that much either, right? The film grossed $115,000 in the United States and Canada. Worldwide, the film grossed $21 million. It wasn't made for very much money. It really wasn't. But the entire thing is that other places do not have a problem with foreign films. For whatever reason it is, here we do. We don't like to read subtitles. I understand that. The latest thing trend is reading Texas messages on the screen. They're going back and forth. And there's a problem with this. Because you're reading them off the actual phone screens. Depending on the font, depending on the lighting and everything else, they come up well or they don't come up well at all. That becomes problematic. All right, so a little trivia. The filmmakers were unable to get permission from South Korean government, that's where this film's made, to film in an actual hospital. So all the scenes in the film are set in John Jam. I hope I'm saying this right. If I'm not, please, my truest sympathies of me butchering the language, were actually filmed in the National Maritime High School in Busan. All right, now a lot of you know the Train to Busan. There you go, right? With the production team adhering closely to our floor plan of the hospital to recreate exactly the same exterior and the hallways. This is really, you know, smart, going up and above, beyond what you can. You can't get what you want? No. All right, and let's get this, and we'll do what we can with this. Really smart. The film was a critical financial success. It became the third most watched horror film in South Korea after Phone in 2002 and The Tale of Two Sisters in 2003. Of course, this has always been aged down because of when this came out and other films, so it probably has gone down a little bit further. But still at the time, this is still considered very good. The conception for the film was actually inspired by a 2012 article where CNN Travel selected and the abandoned psychiatric facility by the same name as one of the seven freakiest places on the planet. And in fact, after the film was made, the owners of the actual psychiatric facility by the same name as this film sued unsuccessfully the people who made the movie because they didn't want the film to be released because they said that it would hurt them in any type of future financial sales of the property or something, to redevelop it in any such way. However, one of the reasons that that lawsuit didn't work, from what I understand, is because of the CNN travel, where they said, well, it's one of the seven freakiest places, and you didn't say anything about that. And other people had written about it and stated about it, and you didn't comment about them. But since this film is out and it's making money and it's getting a lot of attention, now you want to say something. But the biggest thing is they never filmed at your location. They just recreated it in a way. And they used a different location and used your name. That's something that was well known in the area. So therefore, really, you can't get mad at them for doing something. So the lawsuit basically failed. Now, this film is got a reference with Return to House on Haunted Hill from 2007. So, you know, another little kind of worthy item there. You know, how they reference things is very cool. This film is found on Plex and Tubi. And now for my opinion about it. And let me get into this. This is a found footage film. All right? And I'm really torn on the found footage subject. I really am. It's really got to be done well for me really to get into here. All right? Now, there's nothing really new here. You want to think along the lines of the Grave Encounters films. But it's got a really good execution here. It does use some kind of upgraded technology to stream live any paranormal encounters. It does have the premise in the run-of-the-mill small crew from a horror web series. And I am not kidding here, okay? Absolutely not kidding here. Now, just to purely note it, I want you to be aware. The Horror Times started in October of 2017. This film came out in 2018. All right? I'm making a point here. Because in the film, the horror web series is called Horror Time. I ain't making it up. That's what it's called. When I saw it in the film, I was like, say what? Horror Time? And I run the Horror Times. Well, I don't own it, but I'm the editor of it. And I just thought, oh yeah. Yeah, you know there's a review coming of this just because of the word Horror Time in there, right? So there you guys go. They grab cameras to explore abandoned and isolated asylum late one night for a live broadcast. Now, look, it does have a kind of a weird, slow, quirky introduction of the characters and the chemistry. And then it starts to give you a little history of the asylum and some other thrill seekers. And then basically they start disappearing, entering the building. And it works quite up really nicely. You got your basic jump scares are planted in there with your equipment failures in there. But yeah, I think the film does pretty well. Again, like I said, it's not trying to reinvent the wheel or anything like that. It does work to build tension. It doesn't really let go of that. So I do like that part. I just wish that beginning moved a little bit faster, had a little bit more speed to it. But sometimes starting a movie is difficult. It's like starting an article, starting anything in that beginning part. It's difficult. You really got to think about your opening. How do you want to go? Slow burn or pow? And I'm going to be pretty honest. I think surprise really does do a lot for an opening. It basically puts you in your seat. That tells you, bang, look what I did. And if I do that again in about 7 minutes later and hit you again really hard, you got to go to the bathroom, you're going to hold it. I mean, that's the attitude. That's the kind of film you're looking for. A film that has 1-2 punch. And that makes you stay. Okay? Kind of like the Evil Dead Rises movie. Its opening does that really well. Great kind of opening. Really just throttles you into your seat. You don't want to go. You're not going to go. You're going to stay. That's it. We're done. And that's what you have here. Like I said, I can't really then get mad at the setting, because once you really know the background that you're not filming at the actual asylum, you had to recreate it, which kind of gives a lot of faith to the set designers and the filmmakers themselves. And that, I think that works well. I mean, it doesn't give a ton of detail about the hauntings, but it does make you want to watch the film to learn more. So I think it was done very well. And if you're into kind of foreign horror and things, you really can't go wrong. This is a pretty good film to enjoy. All right. So with that being... You know what I almost forgot to do there? I forgot to tell you about the director, the writers, and the stars of this film, John Jam. And for that, I do sincerely apologize. So let's get into that right now, shall we? And this is all being done by thanks to the Google Translator, because again, there is no way I would want to try these names, because I would butcher them so badly. So instead of doing them in their natural sounding language, we're doing kind of an English translation here. So hopefully it sounds a little bit better, because I don't think anybody would understand the Google Translator, what it was trying to tell us. So here we go.
Yung Bum Shik
is the director. Now moving over to the next tab, we have the writers.
Yung Bum Shik, Sang Min Park.
And now for some stars of the film. So here you go.
Wai Ha Jun, Jay Yu, Yu Zhe Yun, Sung Wook Lee, Yiwan Moon, Ah Yin Oh.
And there you guys go. Just wanted to throw that in there. Kind of forgot it, so now I did it. And now you guys can go on with everything else. Being said, let's play a track here. Kind of roll us out and get us ready for another film. We're going to be playing a band called Summerlands with the track Seventh Seal. right, so you guys just heard Summer Lands with the track Seventh Seal. They're on Facebook and Instagram. Also on Bandcamp. Thanks goes out to the label. Relapse Records, found on Facebook, Twitter, and Bandcamp. Just to let you know, I was unavailable for Friday, April 14th, so nothing got seen that day. So that brings us, of course, to Saturday, end of the week, April 15th. The film is The Seventh Sign from 1988, rated R, an hour and 37 minutes long. On this day, I also had the advantage of seeing The Pope's Exorcist. Obviously, though, for today, we're going to be centering on The Seventh Sign. This is something that's going to be happening in the future. If I watch more than one film in one day, I will only be picking one movie, most likely, to talk about. Maybe during the Halloween season, we'll ramp up and do two visits of horror shows. I don't know how we're going to really work that out yet. That's kind of a wait-and-see thing, so we'll have to wait and see. This movie is 35 years old. It's a drama fantasy horror film. Let's get into the main people who, you know, brought us this picture. Director was Carl Schutz, or Schutz. The writers were Ellen Green and Clifford Green. It stars, and we're going to bring up the Google Translator for one of these, only because, to be quite honest, I will butcher somebody's name in this, and I know exactly whose I'm going to butcher, and if you know this film, you know who I'm going to butcher too. So we got Demi Moore, Michael Biehn, and then we have Google Translator, please help us out.
Jürgen Prochnow.
Thank you very much for that, because without your help, I would be completely screwed for trying to get that guy's name right. All right, so for the rest of this review, by the way, or, you know, summary of this film, his name is now going to be known as JP. That's right, because we have to talk about him, but we're going to call him JP. Then it's Peter Friedman, John Taylor, and Lee Garlington. Film that put it out, or the company should put it out, I should say, was TriStar Pictures. Summary: Abby Quinn is eagerly awaiting the childbirth, but is haunted by dreams where she suffers a miscarriage. When she decides to rent a room to a mysterious stranger, she realizes a chain of events that will unleash the end of humanity. This film got a 5.8 out of 10. Release date was originally for April 1st of 1988. We have four taglines. None of them are really good taglines in the sense of too damn long. But here we go. It was foretold there would be seven signs. The seventh sign will be a woman. Her hope is all we have left. Next one. The woman stands between the wrath of God and the future of mankind. All right. The seals have been broken. The prophecies have begun. Now only one woman can halt the end of our world. Mm-hmm. And lastly, an ancient evil has been awakened, and there is nothing you can do to stop it except pray. Okay. Now you can wonder, you know, will your prayers be enough? That could be an interesting kind of, you know, tagline. You know, will your prayers be enough? Five words with a question mark on it. And you could put that, you know, in italics and have that kind of slanted there. Will anything save mankind? You know, so you got something like that. You could, would anything save mankind from the seventh sign? You know, this sort of thing, right? This movie is a very good movie, all right? I do want to tell you that the Vatican setting was done in Los Angeles, California, at the Ebel of Los Angeles. So you guys find that. You guys can check it out yourselves. Little trivia for the film. The film's title refers to the seven seals that are featured in the final book of the New Testament of the Bible, which is the Book of Revelation. The film obviously references Rosemary's Baby from 1968 and is referenced in Bless the Child from 2000. I watched this film on DVD. Now, how should I put this? All right, let's kind of get into this a little bit. It's going to get a little deep, so I do apologize for that. First of all, this is what's probably known to many people, not a lot, but some, as a Christian or religious base horror movie. All right? So be aware of that. The Seventh Sign has some serious heavy undertones. And it's well crafted. It's atmospheric thriller. It has a truly fantastic cast. And a lot of tough emotional places that it's going to take you to. And it's still a captivating film without truly getting deep into the religious roots. So this is not like the film Nefarious, which is something else completely different. And if you listen to the Baron's Crypt show coming up this week, in fact, that show, Baron's Crypt, is going to be airing. Our first show back is coming up on, I believe it's the 5th of May, so be aware of that. We're going to get into Nefarious a little bit on that show. But this film, I think, works better. The story is cohesive. It's suspenseful. It's eerie. It's got the skillful acting, like I said. You know, Michael is really great in this film. JP is fantastic. Demi's very good also. You know, you got a lot of really great things here. The actors of Manny Jacobs and John Taylor are really good standouts in their roles, too. So if you're looking to maybe do a demo reel or you're looking to advance your acting, this is a great film to do maybe something from, because it is really different. It really pulls away from a lot of the other people out there who do something well-known or something like that. And you want to maybe distance yourself from that. Here's something that you guys can definitely enjoy. It has fantastic going-ons. Really kind of brings forth that book of Revelations, all right? And the prophecies connected to her unborn son. You know, getting drawn into the mysterious events. And again, you got this kind of, an apocalypse, all right, that's occurring here. Various signs emerging from biblical omens. What I always find interesting, of course, in the film is that, you know, it always saying, men know what to do, men wrote the Bible, men know everything. Really? Because, you know, it all comes down to this woman. It all comes down to her. She has to make the choice. That's the whole entire thing. Her choice. Incredible word, right? Her choice. She has to choose. The premise, I don't want to give too much away, but let's just say that there's a premise that heaven's running out of souls, so to speak. A little weirdness there. But again, you got to really get into the deep religious theory. I mean, we're talking really, really deep amount here. And again, is it Christian horror? I don't want to say it's Christian horror, but I would say it's got truly religious horror overtones, undertones. It's all flowing through here. A lot of things is happening in this movie. So you're either going to be really into it or you're not. I'm sorry to say that. This film breaks one way or the other. There's not a lot of middle ground. You're either going to buy into what they're selling in the film or you're not at all. And unfortunately, there's even a group, and I have to say this because I read the reviews, I read other people's notes, I read things, that there is a group of people out here who find this film blasphemy. Because they go, this is not the right way. Because it goes against my thinking, my way, my everything, and therefore you didn't do it my way, therefore your movie is wrong and there's nothing right about it. And I always find that interesting. So everything has to be your way. And if it's not your way, right down to the last dot on the I and the cross of a T, then it's wrong. But you're right. And the attitude is, yes, I'm right, you're wrong. And we've always done this in everything. Down to reviews. Down to simple film reviews. Somebody goes, Baron, you're wrong about this movie. This movie is the greatest thing out there since sliced bread. All right. But just to let you know, there's a lot of different types of sliced bread out there. There's white. Wheat, you know, there's marble. There's a lot out there, okay? You got a lot of different selections nowadays. It's not just one kind. So, you know, the film is like that, too. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot of dialogue, but there's action. it doesn't all take place in one room. There's a lot of things that go on. And really, JP, I mean, let's face it. JP really brings this role. He's the mysterious stranger. He looks like it. He looks like a man who has seen a lot, who's up to some interesting aspects that he's doing. It does make for a lot of things. There's a couple parts in there where he'll say to, you know, Abby that, well, what is your view? What is your thinking? Well, the Michael character is more of, well, what could she do? You know, not a condescending attitude, but a little bit of, what? It's out of her control. And, you know, JP's character is bringing it about saying, no, why does it have to be out of her control? Does she not have a voice? Can she not speak for the one she's carrying? It's her voice. It's her choice. So these are things that are very important here. And that makes the story really great. And a lot of people say it doesn't have the religious roots. It does and it doesn't. It's like the film Stigmata. That has religious overtones, obviously. That's a religious horror film. Rosemary Baby has got religious overtones throughout the film. These are films that have this. So it becomes an interesting aspect for you to look at. And if you want to, great. If you want to bypass and don't want to watch this, that's fine too. You don't have to. You know, you could go and watch The Pope's Exorcist, which, by the way, I found out is getting a sequel because it made a ton of money at the box office. It was a really great story. Russell Crowe does a fantastic role in the film. Obviously, there's a lot more to explore in his character and such. The only thing I would say about that film, just to sidestep here for a moment, is that I wish to have the Pope be possessed. That would be a lot more fun, wouldn't it? So, personal opinion. All right, but otherwise, that's it. Thank you for tuning in. Now, listen, we're going to play two tracks here on the way out. The first one is going to be about a three-minute-long track called The Battle Hymn of the Republic. Now, the reason I'm playing this particular track is because it is a track that's actually heard in the movie. And I just wanted to get it out there because I just think it's a track that was really good in the film. And when I can play something from a movie, I do. And this is not the actual the composition that was played, but it's one that we have permission to play from the Creative Commons license. It was originally done by Chase Hathaway, and you can find his music on Bandcamp, so be aware to check that out. And then, of course, as we always close out the show, it's going to be Bloody Hammer's Welcome to the Horror Show as our closeout track, so enjoy that. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in. Please take the time to go on Facebook and like Baron's Crypt page, and also like the Horror Times Facebook page. We're so close to having 5,000 likes or followers, however they work that on Facebook. And we're so close. I think we're like 155 away. We really are getting so close. We really need your help to do that. So definitely, please, if you can, just take a moment to like the page. It doesn't cost you anything. Doesn't really bother your day. Just a click like. That's it. That's all we're asking for. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in to the Baron Crazes Visions of Horror. Hope you enjoyed this. And as soon as we get all caught up on all these past Visions of Horror, the actual column Visions of Horror for April will be released onto the site as we start rolling out more things for the May issue. So thank you all. And I guess that's about it. Enjoy.
life. It's okay, everything's wrong, so I behave. The manic priest is waiting, but inside you it's alright. It's okay, shock and shame is so far out of date. Blame is left on all you to load your guns and tell the truth. Shock and shame are so far out of range. The blame is left.